live from Earth, it's Space Radio. This is Paul Sutter, and coming up, we're talking about Mars is moist. And if I've time, Einstein was right again. Darn you, Einstein. And of course, taking listener questions about all things in the universe, because that's what this show is about. We record every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, so call 888-581-0708 to join the conversation. And in today's Blue Shift, I'll be talking about watching out for UFOs, but first the news. Hello, space fans. Welcome to Space Radio. I'm Paul Sutter, astrophysicist at Ohio State, chief scientist at COSI. For the next half hour, your agent of the stars. Got an exciting show for you today on Space Radio, where we talk about all the wonderful, complicated things in the universe. This show lives on listener questions. We record every Thursday at 4 p.m., and now I am back in Studio A of WCB Radio Columbus. Just call 888-581-0708. Light it up. You also follow along on our live streams on YouTube and Twitch. Go to spaceradioshow.com for the links, and you can join all the space cadets from Salt Lake City, Nagaland, India, Fort Pierce, Florida, Austin, Texas, Glen Ellen, Illinois, Allentown, Pennsylvania, Cape Town, South Africa, and New Jersey. And of course, other places in the world. Seriously, folks, I've only prepped 10 minutes of show material tops, so get those calls and questions in. Before I start taking calls, I wanted to share some interesting bits of news I caught recently. And there's two big things going on this week. One dropped yesterday and one dropped today. And I want to talk about the one today because there's actually a question already from the space guests about the one yesterday. And so I will fold that in later. But I wanted to talk about testing relativity. And a big collaboration, worldwide collaboration, has been staring at stars, you know, which is what astronomers tend to do, but looking at certain stars orbiting a giant black hole in the center of our Milky Way galaxy. And one star in particular follows a relatively close orbit around that black hole, comes about 120 times further than the Earth does around the sun, which is close enough for me, thank you very much, around a giant black hole. But because of its orbit, it started screaming, going fast, going 2.5% the speed of light, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that is a lot. And this is a wonderful test bed for relativity. One, because an object is going really, really, really fast. And two, because it's getting close to a strongly gravitating source, also known as black holes. So you get this combined test. The light from that star is going to be twisted and pulled. It's going to be stretched out. It's going to be squished. And the astronomers measured it. And guess what? Einstein's relativity, both special relativity and general relativity, made predictions for what the light coming off this star ought to look like. And that is exactly what we measured. So a reporter from Associated Press reached out to me for a comment on this. We had a great 20-25 minute conversation. And of course, the quote that he pulled to put in the Associated Press article, which is now blasted all over the world, is, "I feel like we're beating a dead horse." And now you might take that negatively, like I think these astronomers and astrophysicists are wasting their time. They are absolutely not wasting their time. I went on to say, and this was also included, that I, along with physicists around the world, would love to finally see a crack in Einstein's relativity, because then we can progress and go forward and learn new things about the universe. But Einstein outsmarts us all the time, and we have yet to find a crack in relativity. It's surviving all possible tests on all sorts of scales, from the solar system to the edge of the universe, from here to the edge of a black hole. Einstein wins every time. He's just too darn smart for us, and it's getting really frustrating. So my hat's off to the wonderful astronomers and experimentalists, instrumentalists, astrophysicists, theorists in this big collaboration. Fabulous result, painstaking, years of painstaking work to get this result. Absolutely valuable test. We need to do it. My sarcastic comment was more about dang it, we keep testing relativity and Einstein keeps winning. One of these days, I'd like for us to win. It's our turn. One of these days, one of us has got to prove Einstein wrong. But just not today. Not today and not around this giant black hole in the center of the Milky Way galaxy. So fabulous result. Good result. Solid science. Einstein wins again. We know that general relativity is not a complete description of gravity, especially gravity at small and strong scales. What is supposed to replace it? We don't know. We got nothing, because every time we test relativity, it comes out smelling like roses. So that's the latest and greatest when it comes to space. It's time to have a conversation. We've got a listener question from the Space Cadets ready to go. This is from Slinkerdeer over on YouTube asking, is anyone else excited about the Mars announcement? So here's the news that came out yesterday that an orbiter, a European orbiter around Mars, has been bouncing radio waves off the surface of Mars for a really long time. Years, I think 8 years or something like that. And they made a big announcement that they think that underneath the South Polar Cap, so Mars's polar caps are just like the Earth does, and underneath our polar caps is a lot of rock, and under parts of our Antarctic ice sheet, we think there are pools of water, there are lakes. We think a similar thing is happening on Mars, or these astronomers think there's a similar thing happening on Mars. And they base this on their radar observations. They're bouncing radars off the surface, off the ice sheet, and it bounces, it bounces, it bounces. And then there's a spot, something like 12 miles across, that bounces a lot more than the rest of the ice. So you're like, oh, that's a little strange. And you start running the mathematical models of what could create this bounce, what could create this radio signal. And water can create that radio signal. It bounces radio waves different than ice does. But you're like, liquid water on the surface of Mars. It's somewhat cold there. So you start thinking, okay, in order to be a liquid, it has to be really briny. It has to be really salty. Saltier than Greg, my producer. It has to be supremely salty in order to stay liquid at those frigid temperatures. I'm not excited. I'm sorry. I'm just not there. I think I have been burned one too many times with Mars. We know Mars had liquid water on its surface a long time ago, and it dried up a long time ago. But we've been teased like, oh, we found evidence for ancient microbes on Mars. Turns out it was just minerals doing funny things. A year or two ago, we had the announcement of, oh, look at these. In these crater walls, we get these lines of water, this oozing, seeping water. Turns out that was just some dirt doing funny things. And so I've been burned, man. I've been burned about Mars, and I'm just not letting myself go there because I don't want to get excited just to have it end in heartbreak. I'm just too jaded when it comes to liquid water and life on Mars. There are some funny things going on with this analysis. The Americans, NASA has a space probe, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, in orbit around Mars, doing reconnaissance, hence the name. They don't see any sign of this. They operate at slightly different frequencies, so maybe that's the issue, or maybe it's not there. There's also some games that the European researchers are playing with their analysis. They've been operating this instrument for years, and they would see little glitches, and they would see, you know, they'd see it, but they kind of brush it to the side, and then they change their processing methods, and then surprise, there's a big lake underneath the ice of Mars, and you're like, are you sure? It's not just because something funny is going into your analysis, into your processing. Maybe is it wishful thinking? You're like, oh, that's something interesting. We should highlight that feature. And then you highlight the feature. And look, there's a feature when really it was just noise or a glitch or an artifact. The researchers are doing what researchers are supposed to do. They did the work. as best they could and as honestly as they could. They wrote a paper about it describing, here's our results, here's how we got to the results, here's our analysis, here's the data, here's our interpretation of the data, here's what we think is going on. So absolutely no problem with the researchers. This is how science moves forward. It's by doing the best you can and telling the world exactly what you did and what you think is going on. Then other people are going to go in, dig in the analysis. Did they do it right? Other instruments orbiting Mars. The Chinese have a mission to Mars right now. They'll be orbiting. They'll have the right frequencies for an observation to confirm this. You know, this is the game that science plays. This is just how it goes. And that's totally fine. And I'm just not going to get excited about it. There very well could be a big old lake on Mars that you could go ice fishing in. Thanks to Larry Beckham, the Space Cadets, for that suggestion. But I'm just not going to go there right now. I'm not going to get excited. I'm not going to get my hopes and dreams up just to have them crushed again. I'm going to wait and see on this liquid water lake on Mars. Very cool announcement. And if in 5 years it's confirmed, then, you know, salutations to all of them. But for now, let's just assume Mars is dry and cold and dead, because that's the way it appears to be. And that's the safe one that doesn't get our feelings hurt. Thank you for that wonderful question, Slinker Deer. We're going to take a quick break. Don't forget to call 888-581-0708 to join the conversation, or you can catch the live streams on YouTube and Twitch. Go to spaceradioshow.com for the links. By the way, that phone number you can call anytime, even when we're not recording, and leave a voicemail, and I will play your voicemail on the air and answer your question. I'm Paul Sutter. This is Space Radio. This show is brought to you by you. Go to patreon.com/PM Sutter. You are making this show happen. Yes, you. And if you're not, you can start making it happen. It just starts at $1 a month. You can contribute to the ongoing success of Space Radio. See you after the break.
Hi, it's Ray from Car Talk. A lot of people have an old car they'd love to get rid of, but get this. One generous WCBE fan donated a 1941 Plymouth Special Deluxe. Somehow, it managed to slip through my claws, and I'm ashamed of myself for that. But it generated cash for the station. That old car has been turned into Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and more. Good work, Ohioans. Keep those cars coming.
Find out more by clicking on the Support WCBE tab at WCBE.org.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Paul Sutter. This is Space Radio. We've got loads of Space Cadet questions ready to go. But remember, you can join the conversation by calling 888-581-0708 or by following those Space Cadet live streams over on YouTube and Twitch. Go to spaceradioshow.com for the links. Remember, you can call that phone number anytime you please, and you can leave a voicemail that we will play on the air. It's lots of fun. Now, another question from SAHM over on YouTube. Do you think instant communication like quantum entanglement will become a thing like cell phones in the near future? I just did a big podcast recently on my Ask a Spaceman podcast about quantum entanglement, about this spooky action at a distance of how subatomic particles can seemingly connect with each other, where they can share a common state. So if you observe one in the state of one, you automatically instantly know the state of its partner, no matter how far away its partner is. And it appears that this quote unquote communication happens instantly. This connection happens instantly. And SAHM is asking about, can we use that to talk to each other? Like, can I take two entangled particles mixed all together, send one far away, and I can take mine and start wiggling it back and forth? Wiggle, 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 wiggle. And then the one you have starts wiggling in response and goes wiggle, 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 wiggle. And it's perfectly in sync and it's instantaneous. No speed of light barriers. I mean, no. Unfortunately, quantum mechanics prevents us from doing all the cool things we would like to do with entanglement. Entanglement is about measurement. It's not about communication. It's about measurement. If I have a mystery box and I open up my box, I will see a particle in a particular state. And then you, if you open up your box, you will see the particle in the corresponding, the connected state. But that's it. That's it. Once I do that, once the lid is off the box, the entanglement's done. The particle's like, okay, we've coordinated. We've made sure we're all lined up. And that's it. I start wiggling my particle. Wiggle, 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 wiggle. All I'm going to do is wiggle my particle. It's not we're going to wiggle your particles. We don't wiggle together anymore. I'm just going to be a lonely guy in my room wiggling this particle. And nothing else is going to happen. Quantum entanglement is about measurement, not about communication. So unfortunately, we can't send messages with it. And that's it. So it's not going to replace cell phones anytime soon. Another great question over from the Space Cadets, the Lars Rye Jeppesen, asking SpaceX missed the fairing recovering yesterday, which is, they did have super bad weather. Do we have a prediction if they'll ever get it? And if so, when? It's just a guess. So SpaceX is doing lots of cool stuff. SpaceX is doing lots of cool stuff. They are launching rockets up into space, and they are returning the first part of the rocket, landing it back on a barge or on land, spitting it up, cleaning it up again, and then sending the rocket back into space again for another shot, and doing that a bunch of times. The base engine is not the only part of the rocket. That's not the only thing that makes up a rocket. That's just the first part. It's a very expensive and important part, which is why SpaceX focused on recovering that part. Another major important part is the fairing, which is the shell. It is the eggshell that keeps all the sensitive satellites and space probes or astronauts or whatever nice and protected as they blast through the atmosphere at tens of thousands of miles per hour. So as soon as it gets up into space, the fairing peels off, whoosh, releases the thing out in space, and then the fairings like crash into the ocean and kill a whale or something. I don't know what happens. We don't usually track it. But SpaceX is trying to recover those fairings. And they have a ship that has a giant catcher's mitt, and they try to, you know, scoot it over to the right spot and then grab the fairing and then, you know, save some bucks. So you don't throw away your fairing. And there you go. You got your fairing back. They've tried it a couple times, or a few times, I think. They failed a few times. It's a very, very tricky thing because the fairing is just a dumb piece of metal that is just falling. It doesn't have rockets or motors or guidance systems attached to it, so it's a very tricky thing to catch it. Will they eventually catch it? Yes. Will they be able to consistently catch it 100% of the time? That I'm not too sure about. But hey, good for them for trying. Good for them for trying to reduce, reuse, and recycle their fairings so that they can get to space cheaper. So good luck. Best of luck to Elon Musk and SpaceX. John Musk over on YouTube also asked, how much water did they discover at the Mars South Pole? And then Don Archangel asked, why did it take so long to find liquid water on Mars? So they found, it's a little bit hard to tell, this lake is about 12 miles across, seems to be a single body of water, is at least 3 feet deep. That's what they need in order to explain the radio signal. If it's shallower than that, then you wouldn't get this bounciness from the radio waves that we're blasting to Mars. So it has to be at least 3 feet deep, could be deeper, which is a decent amount of water. It's certainly not ocean. It's not Great Lakes. It's a nice little lake. It's a nice lake. I wouldn't mind having a house on the shores of that lake, underneath a mile of ice, which is why it took so long to find. Mars has a lot of water. Mars has a ridiculous amount of water, but it's all frozen. It's frozen in the ice caps. It's frozen just underneath the soil and as a sort of permafrost. Liquid water is vanishingly rare, very difficult to find. And this particular body of water, if it really does exist, is underneath a mile of ice. So not exactly going to pop out the first time you take a peek at Mars. You got to do some very sophisticated analysis in order to get the subtle hint of a signature that there might be this body of liquid water buried under so much ice. So that's why it took a long time. That's why it'll take a long time to confirm. We got to get other satellites on the mission with different frequencies, multiple passes. This is a very weak signal that you need to build up over the course of years in order to get a robust detection that you can actually do something interesting with it and make it write a paper. We're almost out of time today on Space Radio, but before we go, it's time for the Blue Shift. I'm Paul Sutter, and you're listening to Space Radio, and this is the Blue Shift, my opportunity to get a little bit closer to you. And I want to tell you to watch out for UFOs. Not UFOs, the unidentified flying object, but UFO, the movie. There is a movie being released September 4th on DVD and digital platforms. Stars Gillian Anderson, David Strathairn, Alex Chance, Ella Purnell. Amazing cast. It was filmed most entirely in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I was very lucky to be assigned or attached to the film as a science consultant. I worked with the writer and director, Ryan Esslinger, for months and months before they even started shooting, polishing up the script, making sure the science and the math was legit, giving him some cool ideas that he was able to work into the film. Very amazing, very cool to work with a producer or a writer or director or a team that wants to make the science accurate, that wants to fold science into the story of the film. It is a wonderful film. I was on set a few times helping with the set production of making sure the mathematics in the background blackboards were on point. Some of the scenes take place in a lecture on mathematics. And so what the teacher, played by Gillian Anderson, the professor, is legit. I made a video for Gillian Anderson showing her her lines so she knew the cadence and just how would a math professor actually approach writing this on the board and describing it at the same time. That was a really cool experience. I'm in the movie. I have a small part in the movie talking with David Strathairn, who plays an FBI investigator. I play a male astrophysicist. It is also who I am, but it also happened to be the title of the character. I interact with David. My lines were cut. It's all right. Not because of my performance, but I'm still in the movie. It still counts. And it's just an amazing movie. I fell in love with the script when the director and writers first shared it with me. It's a real thinker movie. It's a movie where science and math are almost at the level of a co-star. It's a movie where the main characters are trying to understand deeper truths about the universe in trying to approach that very methodically and scientifically and analytically. And there's also a very powerful emotional story. It's just a really, really good movie. I'm very excited for the movie. It will be out digital and DVD platforms this September. It's distributed by Sony, and I'll be showing clips. If you live in Columbus, we'll be doing some screening events, and I know there are other screening events happening in LA that I might get to be a part of. That will all be worked out, and there'll be plenty of more media to come about that. And unfortunately, this broadcast is almost done. Thank you for joining me on this voyage of space radio. Once again, I'm Paul Sutter, and this show is brought to you by the Ohio State University Department of Astronomy. Learn more at astronomy.osu.edu. This show is also brought to you by you. Go to patreon.com/PM Sutter and you can keep this show on the air. Thanks to Greg Mobius for producing, Dan Michalko for being awesome, and all the fine crew at WCBE Radio for making this show possible. We record every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Call 888-581-0708. To join me on the air, you can also call anytime and leave a voicemail. You can also catch the YouTube and Twitch live streams. Go to spaceradioshow.com for the links. You can also follow me directly. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. My name is @PaulMattSutter. Thanks again, Earthlings, for listening. All the space cadets for the wonderful questions. See you next week. And remember, science is for sharing. And of transmission.